Accession number 11595, reel 2.
Some of the, maybe the personal hygiene type things that would have been more difficult over in the Pacific. Did y'all find ways to get around that to make things
a
little
more? Well, they usually had a place. On the airfield, which would be out. But, you know, if you were shy and very backward, you'd get all these men around all the time. You just didn't go to the bathroom.
I hope you didn't get kidney
problems. It could become a health problem.
Uh-huh.
That's right. They had chemical toilets, but you never used
them. They had chemical toilets, but that you never used them. And I think this was on the airplane that you were talking about. That the chemical toilets you were talking about, these are ones on the airplane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
they weren't enclosed in a cabinet type. It was just really open.
Maybe a curtain, but not an actual bathroom door that you could close. For the patients, I guess, they had to put up with...
they could use it. Men have a difference of feeling about things like that. And if you're the only woman aboard a plane with all men, now you can actually be a little reluctant to go to the bathroom and practically on display.
Is there any flight that you can remember that you would identify as your most demanding?
Demanding.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always remember demanding in the sense that you had to be alert, and that was in the Philippines, and a small island where the fighting was going on. You can see the shelling all around the land, and I picked up quite a large number of patients or whatever the plane held at that time. Were recent wounds, you know, very recent. And one was I think he was an officer, and he had a tracheotomy. Just fresh, you know, brand fresh. Well, you didn't have any suction machines, I don't believe. Now, I'm not maybe mistaken. It seems to me you just had a catheter or a syringe in case you got into trouble. And I don't think I paid much attention to anybody else but him that night. It was maybe about 30 or 45-minute flight. But he was the one that really concerned me because I hadn't had much experience with this, with the patient with the tracheotomy, so that I thought that I might be overlooking something I should be aware of. I remember the flight surgeon, when he instructed me when he was put on board, he probably gave me some hints and said he thought he'd be all right, so, you know, something like this. I don't even know now if he had oxygen, you know. You might have had a little tank, I don't recall. But I think that was the person that I, patient that I took that I worried most about. Well, another flight, I had a pilot that was picked up about 30 minutes before, and he had a compound comminuted fracture of the leg, and he had a trauma splint on. And, he was a nice kid. He was probably about 19 or 20 or maybe a little more. But he just begged me to loosen that trauma splint because it was just terribly painful. Well, I couldn't give him any more morphine because he'd had some not too long. You had a lot more freedom as far as you could giving morphine. You know, these big strapping kids, and they were healthy. You know, they might be able to take a half of a grain within an hour. But I couldn't give him any morphine because it was too soon. And I remembered the moment here. We had a very good class on fractures. And I can remember that doctor, I'm sure it was, that told us to never disturb a splint or anything when it's been put on until the person that's going to set the fracture. So even though it was all exposed, you could see this, you know, I just couldn't wait till we got on the ground because I knew that guy was really having pain, but I was sure that I shouldn't disturb that tension on that splint. I don't remember how I eased his discomfort now, but I gave him morphine, I know, as soon as I could. But sites like that with patients like that seemed like about five times as long as they are.
Especially if you had a full plane load of patients in addition to the ones.
Well, what you did before you took off, you see, you were lucky you had a flight surgeon turn them over to you, and so you knew the critical ones. And you really had to trust the luck and the good fortune, and that the others had survived and would probably make it the flight, because you couldn't pay too much attention to the ones that seemed to be all right. You had to really keep your eye on the ones that might be emergencies.
Did you ever lose a patient in flight?
No, never did. Mm-mm. No one died while in flight. I was a fly out of Wickham after the war. I refused to take a patient. That was just a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
He had a recent heart attack, and the doctor said, he picked him up over at Tipler. And they brought him to the plane, and the flight surgeon said, nip and tuck, you don't have to take him. Well, I deliberated, but I decided I didn't want to be responsible for him. So the next nurse did take him after he'd been on the ground maybe 8 hours, and he made it, which I was very relieved. But that was a nice part of being a flight nurse. Your decision was up to you as far as a patient. Now, that wasn't true overseas during the war. I'm sure the tracheotomy patient wouldn't have gone out as soon as he did if he'd been in a different situation after the war.
Did you ever have any close calls with patients?
I did, but the psychiatric patient, we didn't have restraining straps or anything like that. And this fellow was on a litter, fully dressed. He wasn't, he was a psychiatric patient. And all he had was little gauze bandages, tied her hands down. And he got loose and grabbed me at the neck. And the cabin door was closed, but just at that moment, the crew chief came out. And as I said, crew chief played a big role in patient care, really. So he helped me subdue him and get him back on. I don't remember if he had something he could restrain him with or what. But you didn't have any tranquilizers. You didn't have anything but Seconal, maybe, and morphine. Well, you couldn't give morphine to a psychiatric patient. And you didn't give Seconal and stuff in flight. I mean, as I recall, the Seconal, maybe it was something else.
You mentioned the crew chief, of being there at the right time. And I think earlier you said
it probably wasn't very long after takeoff, and that's just usually what they did. As soon as they kept the door closed during takeoff, as I recall, and then they would open the door, the pilot would probably send them back to check and see if everything was all right. I'm not sure now.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something earlier that I wonder if you'd like to elaborate on a little bit more, and it had to do with the feeling among a crew when you were up in the air flying.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe a closeness or something like that, and it seems like that was one of those times that you were glad you had a whole team was... looking after those patients instead of just yourself.
Yeah, patients would be helpful, too. Patients had been probably with their buddies in the hospital or had been with them in on the field and fighting, and if somebody was very distressed or something, another one. It was sort of like a buddy system, I think. We find often that patients would help other patients. I think that was... during the war, when you read about it, some of them was always helping somebody else.
Mm-hmm. What, if anything, would you classify as your worst experience during the war?
Well, we grounded one time, and it could have been serious, but it wasn't. I wouldn't say that. It could have been the worst. I think a lot of the worst experiences were being on these islands alone. There wouldn't be any other females, and you'd have to stay in a hut. And I would be very frightened sometimes, you know, it's just really a strange feeling to be off. I think that it turned out very funny, but one island I was on, and we got into lakes, you couldn't take off after sunset or before sunset, some regulation. And I didn't have any patience. We were flying up, and we did a lot of dead-ending, we called it. There wouldn't be anybody. But anyway, this island, I don't recall the name of it, and there wasn't anything there but a hut where there was the people that did the tower work. And this crew and I, and we had to remain overnight, and there wasn't any quarters for me. I think it was Green Island, I don't know. And I would not, where were they going to have me sleep? I don't know. I wanted to sleep in the plane. They wouldn't let me do that. That was against the rules. And I wanted to sleep in this place where these men were and did the tower work for planes landing and so on, had a cot in there, and the crew was going to sleep there, and I wanted to sleep there. I just wanted to sleep in the front. I didn't care if I sat in a chair all night. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't let me do that. So finally, they had a great big old tin-covered thing that they equipment and stuff was in, and they had a cot, and that was, I said, I wouldn't sleep in there unless somebody slept with me. So they ended up with a pilot. And I was probably over there, about there, and he's way up on high, so I can't remember, must have been some equipment. They fixed a bed for him, and he had to go to bed at about 6 o'clock because the sun was dark, you know, over there it got dark as soon as the sun went down. And I had a horrible night. I dreamed that I think it was raining, and it come down on this tin roof. And I was dreadfully afraid of snakes and things, dreadfully afraid. But it turned real funny. They made a big joke of it, and of course they aroused the pilot unmercifully. he said, "When do we get home and tell your wife?" And something like this, you know. I don't remember what his name was. I often wondered about him. I imagine he made a big story out of it, and that was fine. But that was another part of it, being a woman, being afraid. If you had somebody else with you, it wasn't bad. I know in Bougainville, that was a place we often remained overnight, and they had a place for us to stay, but there they had so many crawly things. Lizards, snakes. I don't know how long you can prepare yourself for something like that, because I'd always been terrified of them. If you'd read about them and expose yourself to them or something, maybe they wouldn't have such you wouldn't have such fear of them. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The unknown is what you're afraid of. And I remember in Guadalcanal one time, there were loads of nurses in. That was before we lived there, and they had this big old what do they call those huts? Everybody slept in. Cantonment or something.
Quonset hut.
And it must have held at least 20, and it was almost full. But anyway, we were just asleep. We get us up about 3 in the morning, you know. We always took off very early. And somebody probably was out on a date or been with somebody and came in. And then somebody went out to brush their teeth. You had a Lister bag. You got to go out, you know, use the Lister bag. And the toilet facility was outside. And somebody, fellow, came up, I guess, and propositioned her. Anyway, she came into the tent, if I remember it right, and told somebody else, and this person got real excited and started yelling, and thought that somebody was, coming after someone. And I woke up on the street, and all I could think of was a wild animal or a Japanese. And everybody was shouting and yelling and running, and my friend was across the other bed, and she went by me, and I said, "Wait for me, wait for me." And my foot got caught in the sheet, stubbed my toe, I ended up with a broken toe. But, you know, those are the unknown, as I say, things like that are more frightening than what actual maybe you should actually you should be afraid of.
We've laughed about a lot of the things that
we've often laughed about. One girl, in fact, she, the Marge, is not even living, but we've talked about it when we get together. It's been funny.
Can you think of anything else that really funny that
frightening?
Funny.
There were really many amusing things happened. But unless you get together with somebody else, you don't remember them. And I think that's one of the things that I would tell anybody, to be sure and keep a good log. Because when it's all over with, and like now, reminiscing, you don't have nothing but your memories. And, it doesn't take long to write even a daily account and things that are trivial. But later on, it's something you really want to remember.
The things you think you'll never forget. But of course you do.
Mm-hmm,
all too soon. One of the things that you mentioned, and I wonder if you'd talk a little bit more about it, and I think this was earlier today, was that you earlier today, you used the term esprit de corps.
I didn't hear you, I'm sorry.
Esprit de corps.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you would talk a little bit about what you meant by that.
Well, like I said, I think you were always considered a part of the team, group with the pilots and the crew. And they always made sure, I think, that you had a place to go. That usually there were some medical people, and they had made arrangements for you to stay someplace. But they were very good about that. Like I said, that incident where I had to stay and was the only nurse and there wasn't any facilities. We weren't supposed to RON there, by the way.
Oh.
And it just happened. So, they didn't think, well, it's too bad. You're in it with us. You're on your own. You do what you can. They treated you like a woman. They really did. And still they included you in their responsibilities.
Mm-hmm. I think each of you had, in a way, decided to take care of each other, maybe, in any situation. Mm-hmm. You'd look after the pilot if necessary. The pilot would look after you if necessary. Another thing I heard you mention was about, you've mentioned a few times this afternoon, was about following the rules and the regulations, and you did what they said, and you kind of abided by that.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I've heard of from World War II days, is the importance of jump when they say jump, or... Can you think of anything about that, the following the rules and stuff that might be relevant to helping you get through
the war? Well, I'm sure that we probably could have objected to a lot of things that we were subjected to that we didn't. Now, we were living on Guadalcanal, and we had a very, gung-ho chief medical officer. And we complained to ourselves afterwards a lot about things, and I think we probably could have done something we didn't because we just felt we had to obey him. Was dressing up in full Class A uniform, in fact, without a jacket, but the regular wool pants and shirt, and on parade, And things like that were, he considered disciplinary, I suppose, and necessary. Then we would never think, I don't know if we even complained to Lucy, but I'm sure that she, having a background and much younger than most of us were, many of us were, I should say, wouldn't object to the medical officer. I'm sure she felt the same way that we did. And many things we were subjected to that we didn't protest because we felt we had no choice. We knew it was one of the things we had to do.
Did you find that helpful for you at all, or was it just kind of an inconvenience, those types of things?
You think it was commonplace?
No. did you find it helpful, or was it more of an inconvenience when you were told you must wear this uniform and go on, be in a parade? And
I and think it was just irritating.
If you could change one thing about your time as a flight nurse during the war, what might you have liked to be different?
I think I would have wanted to be much better prepared as a nurse, and in psychiatry, especially. I think when you work in a hospital and you have everything to do with, you don't really appreciate when you have very little to do with. And even though, as I say, I was in a public hospital and we had to learn to improvise, in fact we did, but it still isn't the same as in practice. I don't know if anything like this can be taught, but I think that, preparing yourself by reading everything you can about nursing, even if you have to go back to Florence Nightingale and the Crimean War, and that's still a very interesting history. And she certainly put up with very great odds. I don't know if there's anything you could really change except in yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to, you yourself have to be prepared to be the best person you know how to be, I guess.
Kind of like both mentally prepared, mm-hmm. but also prepared in the sense of your nursing skills or mm-hmm. getting the best training mm-hmm. or background mm-hmm. that you could mm-hmm. get. If I then were to ask you, based on your experiences as a flight nurse in World War II, if you could offer advice to today's flight nurses or to those who might be called, new nurses starting out their careers and they might be called to serve in a future war, what kind of advice would you want to pass on?
What kind of what?
Advice? Advice,
mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
Well, again, I think learn the most you can, be the best person you can, because a lot of your responsibility is on a personal basis, aside from being a nurse. And then I say your relationship with people and your tolerance of difficult situations and living conditions and changes that you come up, that you were ready for something that didn't happen and something else came about. And you have to be amenable at all times to change of plans.
Very flexible.
Very flexible, that's the best word.
mm-hmm.
And I think that should there be another war, and that was the thing when you first called me and said that you wanted to talk about what nurses today should be prepared for or something. I thought, prepare for war? We don't prepare for war, we prepare for peace. And then, I got thinking about it a lot of time. Well, preparing for peace is being prepared for war. So you, in this, when you are out of the service, you forget this, you see. And I think surely you have to be thinking war. But to think of a war today, it'd be hard to anticipate where and how, what type it would be. You may have not any more facilities or any more conveniences than we had. It might be in Europe. It might be right here in the United States. So you can't anticipate some things. Well, I think the only thing you can anticipate is what kind of a person you're going to be yourself.
You make a good point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What do you think maybe helped you the most?
Helped me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of what helped me the most. Probably because I was a little older, maybe I'd had, I think the real young nurses that had just been out of nursing probably found it more difficult than someone who had been working for a few years.
So maybe the
some experience prior to being a flight nurse. Mm-hmm. Yes, I certainly think you should have experience in a hospital or whatever you have as a nurse would be beneficial.
Like you may have had a lot more to draw on from those
That's
years
right.
mm-hmm. after your
mm-hmm.
training
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
than the younger nurses.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe I've kind of glossed over some of the experiences that you might have had while you were in the Pacific. Are there other experiences that maybe you want to talk about a little bit?
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that you maybe aren't aware of at the time, but the fact that there's such an overwhelming number of men in proportion to women, that life is entirely different for you socially, and you keep an even keel and not let this sort of thing go to your head, because you know, someone probably that never in the wide world would ever date, for instance, has all sorts of opportunities. And I think the best times you have and the most fun is when you do things in groups. Go to parties and so on, you know. You should go to dances. Well, if you've never had a chance to dance 2 minutes with somebody and somebody was interrupting, I mean, this, I don't know if this part of it's covered in the programs, but I think it's very important to prepare young nurses for this. It's an emotional thing to be so in demand, what I mean. You know, I don't think you're put on a pedestal. It's just that you're so outnumbered
mm-hmm.
that you become very important, and it can very, you know, you don't know how to handle this, maybe.
Don't let it go to your head.
That's right. Yeah. But also, you know, just don't get overwhelmed by it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you need to make good judgments. I don't think you should ever get moody or keep too much to yourself. I think it's easy to become a little mental yourself under such difficult situations, because it is difficult to live with 21 maybe women or 24, I think we were 25,
mm-hmm.
and under rather restricted conditions and all, and you get little groups and people tend to get clannish, and that's the way we are. We're that way by nature. But if you had ever lived lived in a nursing home like I did, and the school of nursing, you see, you learn. And in the service, we were all in a big barracks. But many girls come into the service from living in by themselves, and you know, and you're putting up with pressures like that, or something that maybe some aren't prepared for. That's why I think a little older nurse is better to be a flight nurse. I don't mean 30 and 40. But I mean, I don't know when girls graduate today, at what age, about?
More like 21 or 22,
well,
maybe.
I don't think 24 or 25 is a bit too old to be a flight nurse. Depending on what kind of experience, and the person, many, many girls probably are very mature, 23, but, I think that maturity and mental stability are two very important things, almost before experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think they screen them very well as far as mental stability, and I don't mean psychotic even. But how you deal with your daily living, you know, is probably investigated.
Mm-hmm. One of the things we were talking about a few minutes ago that you were mentioning was perhaps it fell under the category of advice that you might offer for today's or tomorrow's mm-hmm. flight nurses, and you mentioned something about perhaps if they were a bit older, that they might be a little better prepared for mm-hmm. the wartime situation. Mm-hmm. I think you wanted to say a little bit more to clarify your statement.
You know, when you say older, you're thinking of chronological age, actually, and it's pretty hard to put a year on something, but or on somebody, and say when they're prepared to begin something. But I think if today's nurse is on a four-year program and she's probably goes right from high school into nursing, she's maybe 22, I really believe that she should have a couple of years' experience before she becomes a flight nurse and general nursing, staff nursing. Now, I don't think she's actually going to get that in the Air Force. And you say that nurses have to be in maybe a year before they go to flight school, but nursing in the military is entirely different than nursing in a civilian hospital. So I don't know what type of flight nurses they want to turn out, so to speak, but I think maybe some thought should be given to this of they recruit nurses with more experience. If they're planning for an expansion in the flight nurse corps,
mm-hmm.
that because the experience I feel that you get in civilian hospitals is entirely different than the Air Force.
You used the word earlier, sophistication.
Pardon?
You used the word earlier, sophistication.
Well, as I say, it's hard for me to remember this, but today's young woman is because it's a whole generation between, and maybe we have one and a half generations, and she's been brought up in almost a different culture, and so she probably is sophisticated and has her feet on the ground at 22, but I don't think that really we all were. You know, even though, I mean, when I think back to how I was when I graduated from nursing, I don't think I would have been prepared for the going to war at that time. But it isn't only nursing experience, it's life experiences that you need to stabilize you,
mm-hmm.
mature
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm. I feel. I know I've been asking you a lot of questions, and I don't mean to in any way limit the mm-hmm. types of things that you might want to be talking about mm-hmm. or reminiscing from your own experiences. Is there anything that maybe you thought that I'd ask you that I did not, or anything that you wanted to share and I haven't given you the opportunity to talk about yet?
Well, I think that whether it's patriotism or whether it's just wanting to be a part of some excitement or whatever is happening in the world, but to be a flight nurse is probably a very great honor. I think that if we're going to be, that should be true even if it's peacetime, actually, because it's a special occupation that very few qualify for. When I say very few, I mean, first of all, you have to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And many other things are brought into play. So that I think that it's something that can be very proud of, to be able to say you've been a flight nurse or you're going to be one. And I certainly wouldn't discourage anyone from becoming a flight nurse any more than I would discourage anyone from becoming a nurse, because I still feel that same way about nursing.
Oh, good. Anything else?
I can't Yeah, it seems to me I've done an awful lot of talking.
Well, I'm glad that you have. I thank you so much for sharing your experiences with me today.
Well, it's been a great pleasure. I never thought I'd have an opportunity like this.
Well, I'm glad that I was able to give you that opportunity then, Adele. Thanks again.
You're welcome.